section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting one show at a time.
Hello, my name is George Takei. Before we get started, we would like to remind everyone that this show is for entertainment purposes only. 3/4 of this crap is total BS anyway. The views and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the hosts and should not be associated in any way with our guests and sponsors. If you are easily offended, we recommend you press stop right now. But if you do, you will deprive yourself of the most amazing auditory orgasm. And who doesn't enjoy a good auditory orgasm? Oh my. Welcome to It Burns When I Pee.
Welcome to the dirty stalls of It Burns When I Pee. For the past 6 years, the podcasting god,
hallelujah,
Blake Clayton, has brought you the best music, interviews, and comedy on the interweb. So sit your asses down, grab a hold of those handicap rails, grab a cocktail, and enjoy our next generation of auditory dysentery. Join Blake and his revolving door of cast members as they bring you another fucked up episode of It Burns When I Pee.
1, 2, 3, 4. When I turn my radio dial, I hear it's pop country. Those corporate jerks sure get on my nerves. That ain't country to me. Now it burns when I pee. It burns when I pee. That's what Nashville did to me. So let's take a piss on the Nashville music biz. Cause now it burns.
Follow that, bitch.
Breaks.
just have hunger pain.
Welcome back, everybody, to episode 104 of It Burns When I Pee. I'm your host, Blake Clayton, and I have a very, very special guest with me tonight. A longtime friend, I consider a brother, Joey Henry from the Dirty Sunshine Club. How are you, sir?
Doing terrific. How are you today?
I'm doing great, man. We're finally getting you on as the Dirty Sunshine Club. I'm really excited about the news you got coming out, and it's always great to have you on the show and be able to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor. I really appreciate what you do for the music community and for music in general. Always spreading the gospel.
Right on, brother. So you are getting ready to release a very unique Dirty Sunshine Club album. Can you kind of tell folks what's coming up with that?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. It's something I've been talking about and telling people I'm going to do for a long time. And I like to do the things I say I'm going to do. So it's called the Eyes and Ears Around Us, Volumes 1 and 2. And what it is a collection of songs that I've recorded on my cell phone. I had this old beat-up cell phone for a long time, and I finally finished all the recordings and got a new cell phone. But basically, it's a collection of guitar and banjo songs, and it gives people an insight. I talk about songwriting as channeling ghosts a lot, and this is kind of a real lo-fi version of the space where the ghosts get channeled from.
Awesome.
And not all of them, but a lot of them are within the first, you know, week or so of the song's inception, and so it's still a brand new story. It's still a baby story, and it's not exactly how it's played now, but you know, it's just a lo-fi deal, and hopefully it'll sound like the mixtapes I used to make when I was in high school.
Awesome. So, you know, many people know you as, you know, a member of the Calamity Cubes, but this is your solo stuff. One of the questions I had was, what makes a Joey Henry song a Calamity Cube song or a Dirty Sunshine story?
Well, you know, I think anything that's in my notebook, whether it's a doodle or a sentence or a short story or an unsung story or any of that stuff, that's anything that any of the art that I make, I just call it part of the book of the Dirty Sunshine Club. And that includes the photography and everything. And, you know, eventually that would be the goal, is to have a more produced version where I can put together a fancy book that includes the doodles and includes more of an actual book approach with, along with the CD. But I think they're all Dirty Sunshine Club stories. And, you know, there's nothing in the world to me, absolutely nothing in the world to me like playing music with the Calamity Cubes. That gives me a chance to release something that I've never found in anything I've ever done before. And so I love it when the guys, you know, grow onto a song, and you know, it's just whichever ones they decide they want to sing along with me, it makes it a Calamity Cube song.
Awesome. It's the whole team.
Generally, it's the more like fast, you know, the more upbeat or the faster ones, but I don't do a whole lot of those, so that hasn't always been the case.
Right. So you play both guitar and banjo. Which one do you prefer, and which one do you feel most proficient at?
I love them both. I miss them both. I grew up writing songs on guitar, and ever since I was, you know, 13 or something, I'd spent the 30 to 45 minutes before I was going to sleep in my room playing the four or five songs that I was working on at the time. And I just started playing banjo about 6 years or so ago when the Calamity Cube started. And I absolutely fell in love with banjo. And to be honest, I haven't written a complete song on guitar since I started writing songs on banjo. But that doesn't take away from how I feel about guitar and how I feel about my future with guitar.
Right.
I just absolutely fell in love with banjo. But I love guitar too. And, you know, it's like two lovers that there's not one that's better than the other. They just bring different things out
sure.
of you.
Sure. And is there a different way you approach songwriting when you have a guitar versus a banjo, or?
Well, I think I come from kind of a Dinosaur Jr., Pavement, Sonic Youth school of songwriting, and especially with guitar, that's how I grew up playing it and writing songs. And so there's a lot of bar chords going on, and, you know, maybe a more, I don't know how to say it other than noise rock, or just kind of a, you know, kind of a noisier version, but that's how I approach banjo too. So I don't know that there's a specific difference, although I do finger pick a lot more with the banjo. I know it's not the right way to do it, but whichever way I do it, I love it. And, you know, they're just both beautiful creatures of storytelling. And I, you know, I got two Good Times Twos banjos, and they both have channeled a lot of ghosts. But my guitar has channeled a lot of ghosts too.
Right. So, you know, your songs, one thing I've noticed is your songs rarely have profanity in them. And as a songwriter, do you make it a conscious effort to stay away from using profanity in your songs? And why do you think that it's so profound in lyrics today with a lot of bands?
Well, I don't have anything against it. And I definitely have songs with them. You know, the first Calamity Cubes album has a song called Fuck Yeah Anxious.
Right.
And, of course, on Long Cold Winter, the only two cuss words on that I'm responsible for. But I think maybe it took me a long time to really understand it, but my dad used to talk to me a lot about it. And it's if the story calls for it,
sure,
do it. And if it's an imperative part of the story, do it. But if it's an empty gesture, then let it go.
Right.
You know? And I'm not judging. I ain't telling anybody how to write their songs. I just, in mind, if I need to, and sometimes I do, then I'll do it.
Right.
And if I don't, then I'd rather save the power of those words for when the circumstance calls for it.
Sure. There's a reason. If you do use it, there's a reason for it. It has to do with what's going on.
That's a fucking loser.
There you go. So, you know, as a songwriter, a storyteller, what is your main goal when you're sitting down writing a song? Or do you even have one?
I can't say that I have one. You know, more than a goal, I have a notebook. And, I've had a lot of notebooks throughout the years, and generally I work with one at a time until it's filled up. And the goal is to try to make yourself write stuff down when it comes. That way you don't lose it.
Right.
I know what it's like to take music as medicine, and it's become more and more apparent to me as I continue to play music and share my stories with people, that it helps. I know what music has gotten me through, and
right,
people have let me know what my stories have helped get them through. And you know, I say this a lot, but if I can channel my sadness, and if that helps anybody get through theirs, then it seems like I have a purpose in this world. And even if that's just an illusion that I'm creating to get through the day to day, that's an illusion and a challenge that I accept.
It's definitely your songs and stories are definitely therapeutic. You know, whether it brings you to a time that you don't want to remember or that you do want to remember, you know, either way, it's definitely has an effect, and it will heal you in the long run.
Well, yeah, you know, it's an exploration of feelings that you don't always want to feel, but it's important to explore these things. It's important to let yourself be human and let yourself feel what you have to feel so that you can start letting go of that stuff.
Right.
And for me, whether it's through repetition or articulate exploration, revisiting these places and these times in my life, it's something that I need. Whether I'm just doing it by myself in my room at the end of the night, or whether I'm doing it in a room with 4 to 40 people,
right.
You know? If someone has the patience to sit through the end of one of my slow, sad songs, then hell, they might have needed it just as bad as I did.
Right. And you are very articulate in your lyrics and in your storytelling. I mean, does that, when high school and grade school, were you good at writing, creative writing, and or did that not encompass the same way as it does in songwriting?
Well, I liked it. I wouldn't say that I was good at it, but I like to do that stuff. And revisiting some of my older work with some of my older bands, of course, now I feel a lot of it's, I was about to say whiny, but nothing's changed in that department. You know, it's a lot of it's more a little, you know, just a little more immature. Like nowadays I try to take more of a, instead of you did this, it's more of ultimately, as human beings, we're capable of this.
Right.
And just as mad as I can be at you for something, somebody out there can be that mad at me for that. You know, we're all capable of crazy shit. So instead of trying to hold grudges, how about we just try to understand and get past that and get back to what's important, which isn't the firecracker reaction of the moment, but which is the love and the understanding that ultimately we yearn for past those reaction moments.
Sure.
And that stuff is hard.
Yeah.
That stuff is hard to get through, and it's hard to live through, and it's hard to communicate through, and it's hard to not react to someone else's reaction. And it's really important to have those conversations, even if they hurt.
Right.
And even if you can't have those conversations with the people that you need to have them with,
it's kind of like one of those things where a lot of times, even if you write a letter to somebody and tear it up, it's therapeutic in the end. It's kind of like the same way with writing a song.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
You had originally, I've known you for quite a long time and we've talked a lot before. You know, you originally wanted to be, you know, a skateboard photographer. When did you take the left turn and kind of head toward music instead of continuing to pursue that as a profession?
Well, you know, back in high school, I spent most of my high school, most of my time in high school in the dark room and just doing portraits and doing my photography. And I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I still love it. And then I would spend most of my time at night playing music and writing, just playing my weird songs and, being too scared to share them with, you know, more than a select few people. My friend Eric Ramos here in Wichita, Kansas, is one of the only people that I felt comfortable playing my songs for. And to this day, he's a, you know, a dear musical friend, and we try to support each other's bands as much as possible. But I moved to Kansas City after high school and got real heavy into shooting skateboard photos with the different skate shops up there. And to this day, that whole scene has been immensely supportive of all the music I've done, and I cannot thank them enough. Like, they're such an inspiration of how supportive they are to each other and how you can take the race out of a community and just survive together.
Right.
And that's part of the gospel that I preach in general. And to see my friends and family in the skate community in Kansas City exemplifying that just absolutely blows me away on a day-to-day basis. But eventually I moved to California and went to photography school. And because I'm so passionate about music and because I'm so passionate about photography, it was really hard for me to split my time. And I was having trouble moving forward with either one. And so at one point in time, I decided I have to focus on one or the other.
Right.
And I thought that photography, maybe that was what I needed to do and what I was supposed to do. And so I left the band in Kansas City. I was doing a band called Vent with my friend Ian Mason. And eventually that turned into a band called My Robot Has a Soul. And I left him in Kansas City, and I left a girlfriend in Kansas City, and I moved to California, and I went to photography school. But then, you know, a year or two later, I ran out of money for photo school, and I was just traveling and shooting photos and, you know, living life and not doing a whole lot with music. But while I was doing that, my buddy Ian from the band had gone to Arizona and gone to recording engineer school and had started focusing more on music. And eventually, I spent a month in Kansas City staying at his place and hanging out, and we started jamming together, and we wrote a few songs together again, and he convinced me to move back to Kansas City and start the band back up. And so I stopped being a homeless wayward traveler for a while and started sleeping on his couch, and we got our old band, My Robot Has a Soul, back together, and we started writing music and eventually wrote an album together. It was just really a decision I had to make to either focus on one or the other, basically. Like, I felt like if I continued to split my passion, then I would continue to dwell in mediocrity. And I wanted to see things move forward. And I'm not saying I ever stopped dwelling in that, but right. I haven't gone back to photography. I haven't gotten back in a dark room, and haven't been in a dark room in half a decade. And that's, you know, tragic to me, but I know that my days with photography aren't over.
Right.
I have yet to be settled down enough to find them again. Thank God for Instagram.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, one of the things that me and you have talked about quite a bit about over the years, and one of the things that we share is we both have some sobriety, and we both have had struggles with alcohol. You know, what made you decide to stop drinking?
I say this a lot. I didn't quit because I was bad at it. I was really good at it.
Right.
I loved it. I was dedicated to it. Drink to sleep, sleep to drink. And at the time, I didn't trust anybody that didn't drink. And so I understand when people don't trust me for that reason. You know, basically what it comes down to is I got real sick. I didn't tell myself I was going to quit. My doctors had been telling me for a couple of years, and I was young, but for a couple of years, my doctors had been telling me I need to slow down. And basically, one day I got real sick. I couldn't eat or drink anything. I couldn't hold any water down, and therefore I couldn't hold any whiskey down. And that happened for a few days, and after a couple of days of not being able to take any fluids in, withdrawal from not drinking any whiskey came into play. And a few people have heard this story time and time again, but basically what I did is I sat in a bathtub for 8 days trying to get hydrated through osmosis, and I sang the song Sweet Girl to myself over and over and over again. And, you know, come day seven, come day eight, when I could finally start really holding stuff down on a regular basis, I was just like, well, I'm going to try day nine.
Right.
And then I was like, well, I'm going to try day 10. And since then, there's just been affirmation after affirmation of my decision to quit for me in my life.
Right.
And I'm not judging. I ain't telling anybody else how to live their lives at all.
Right.
I think it's awesome get drunk, get wasted, get hammered, party. Do whatever you need to do for yourself. And for me, I need to figure out ways to deal with myself that aren't that. Because my intention with drinking was didn't come from a space out of love for myself. It came out of a space of not liking myself.
Right.
And whether or not I could honestly say I love myself now, I know that I need to at least live with that intention.
Right. So, you know, you kind of have a lifestyle as a musician of being around alcohol a lot. You know, how do you manage temptation?
There's too much shit to do. when we're on the road, I know it seems like all fun and games, but there's always something to take care of. There's always some TCB that needs to happen.
Right.
And, somebody's got to drive somewhere. And, I don't know. It's, like I said, there's been so many affirmations in my life to affirm my decisions not to drink that it really hasn't been a question. There's been times of pain and times of abandonment when that would have been my go-to reaction. But there hasn't been a whole lot of temptation. There's definitely been times when I wanted to, times like these where I wish I could be at least a liter deep and steep. But I know. My dad was there with me during that week, and he still maintains that that was the scariest week of his life, watching me come so close to what he calls the end.
Right.
And I don't want to put my family or my friends through that kind of thing again.
Definitely, definitely. So on a lighter note, now that we've dug deep into our souls, you're a big pinball. You love playing pinball. How did you get into playing pinball?
Multiball! I think it just, it's always been, I'm a kid from, I was born in 1980, so I grew up in the heyday. It's not something I always realized back then, but pinball is awesome. I don't know how anybody could just walk by one and be like, oh my God, that doesn't look so fun. But I think it started, a couple of years ago, just playing bars that have pinball machines and then playing bars that don't. And then suddenly you just find yourself wanting to play the ones that do.
Right.
and then you find yourself getting all Rain Man on shit and logging the information in your head about what truck stop on what highway in what state has, there's a Loves right when you get into Oregon that has Lord of the Rings and Star Trek Next Generation pinball. And I love that Loves. I don't care if we don't need gas. Normally when we drive by there, it's 4 a.m. and everybody else is asleep. So I'm going to stop and play some games, wake myself up. Because from there to Bend, it's another four hours at least, and the highway you got to go on at that point in time is 55 mile an hour speed limit. So you might as well do something to wake yourself up.
Right. They need to come up with an app that has like locators for pinball places.
They have them.
Oh, they do.
I don't know how accurate they are because I've tried to use them before and I haven't had a whole lot of luck, and it's not available for every city, but, blessed towns like Portland and Seattle and Denver and Austin for being supportive of the pinball community. And, we were on tour in Seattle this winter and we found a zine next to the pinball machine that was a printed piece of paper, and it printed out the locations and the machines at each location for every district in the town.
Oh, wow.
It's called Skillshot. So if you ever get a chance, look it up, Skillshot. And then upon being landlocked here in Wichita, this last winter, I started a deal on Facebook called Skillshot ICT as a homage to the original Skillshot, but just to try to generate enthusiasm and let people know, like, even though you got to go to laundromats and stuff here in Wichita, here's where they're at.
Right.
Here's what machines are where, you know, and try to get people sharing their information, because there's got to be all sorts of hole-in-the-wall bars that I don't make it into that have a machine here and have a machine there. And to let the bar owners know, look, there is enthusiasm here in town, so if you put a machine in, the quarters will come.
Right. Well, I know the High Note in Pekin now has two of them, so keep that in mind.
Yep. Yep. And Chad told me the same thing. And I was just talking to him today. I'm going to send him a copy of the Underground 30 Sunshine Club CD that I burned for people. I fuck up a lot. I'm sending him a copy. And that's one of the reasons, because he's a supporter of pinball.
Right on. So, you know, you and the Cubes haven't really been on, you know, long tours for a while, but you're getting ready to go out with the goddamn Gallows. Where can folks go to, you know, find those dates?
Well, I know that the goddamn Gallows have those all posted on their Facebook page. And if we don't already, we'll be having those all posted on our Facebook page, the Calamity Cubes Facebook page. ASAP. But by the time that you're listening to this, all that stuff should be posted up. And God, I cannot wait. We're all so excited for that. We've been talking to those boys about, you know, we've played shows with them here and there. We've gone on 2 and 3, 4 night runs with them regionally here and there. But we're going to be out with them for, I think, a solid 6 weeks.
Wow.
From a week before Farmageddon Fest to Muddy Roots Festival all over the country. So we are so goddamn excited about that.
That's awesome.
And, you know, we've been landlocked without a van, you know, struggling musicians. Takes us a while to procure the necessary means to get a new traveling apartment, but and one that's roadworthy.
Right.
And that's been part of our problem, is we keep getting a van to buy time instead of buying the right van. And so this time we spent some time to find the right van, and we'll be picking that up hopefully in the next, by the time you hear this, hopefully we'll be announcing that we have a new van, because tour starts in 3 weeks. We gotta hit the road. We don't got much of a choice. But you know what? That's one thing. That's one way we've survived, is making Christmas miracles happen.
There you go. So, most important, where can fans go, and when can they get a hold of The Eyes and Ears Around Us, Volume 1 and 2?
All that information will be released on my Facebook page, the Joey Henry's 30 Sunshine Club page. And Brody Wellman, who recorded the Calamity Cubes' latest album, Old World's Ocean, and he's a bass player for Carrie Nation. He records all their albums, Carrie Nation and the Speakeasy.
Yeah.
He's got all those tracks, and he's doing a very limited, not modifications, but a limited mastering, just making sure that the levels are all listenable and all that stuff. And I'm working on the album art as we speak. So all that should be up and available within the next few weeks. And I'll be releasing all that information on Facebook.com/30sunshineclub. And I think I'll be putting it out through kunaki.com. So you can probably look up kunaki, KUNAKI.com, and search 30 Sunshine Club and find more out about that. But go check out the Facebook page and you know, I'm always posting up random unsung stories, you know, like words that haven't met music yet. I post those up on that page, and random photographs, and just all sorts of random stuff that would inevitably be part of the book of the Dirty Sunshine Club. And go be my friend.
Right on. We'll put up a link to the Facebook page, and we're going to put up a link to your Instagram, too, so people can follow your photography shots, too.
Oh, right on. Thank you.
All right, brother. Well, again, it was a tremendous honor to have you on. We go way back, and I appreciate your friendship. It means a lot to me, and doubly appreciate the music that you give. And keep on doing it, and it is more powerful than you probably realize at times.
Well, thank you very much, Blake. And the feeling is absolutely mutual. You've been an incredible friend since the inception of our friendship. People probably don't know this, but you gave the Calamity Cubes their first online interview, and it was not only was it a hilarious and awesome story about how it got to happen,
yeah.
But, we were all just blown away by how thoughtful the interview was. And I've just always been a huge fan of you as a person. And I think that what you do is a completely selfless act of giving to the world by trying to spread the gospel of the music that gives to you. And I hope that more people tell you that. And, same thing. I don't think you realize how much you mean to people and how much of a difference you've made in so many people's lives.
Well, thanks, brother. I appreciate it. So definitely, yeah. We're going to check out Joey Henry and the Dirty Sunshine Club, but also checking out the Calamity Cubes, making sure we know where you guys are at and make sure you're getting taken care of, right?
Yes, sir.
All righty. Thanks again, buddy.
Thank you, Blake.
I've seen you call, and I want not what you show. It's not what you show.
Hello, I'm Christopher Walken. IBWIP is an interactive show. That means get off your asses and get a hold of us, baby. You can call into the show live or leave us a voicemail. The number is 1-203-429-4711. It's free, so dial it up now, I implore you. You can also email us with questions or comments at blake@ibwip.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to your Pia Vision YouTube page. Well, all the links are on the front page of IBWIP.com.
Would I have pulled when I painted. I never knew that's what I saw. I never knew the sound of death ring till the night I missed the call. Now all I can do is paint these horses. All I can do is paint this field. All I can do is celebrate the lives of those whose fates are sealed. All I can do is paint this fire, raging to set her spirit free. The fire, the ghost of you, the only way to see.
Are you a blogger or a podcaster, or you're just not happy with your web hosts? You need to check out HostGator.com. You're going to find web hosting made easy and affordable. HostGator offers unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click script installs with a free site builder, and the best control panel out there. Stop by today and try a free demo to see how easy it is. And if you use a special coupon code, Section 8686, you'll save 25% off your web hosting packages. What do you got to lose? Check out HostGator.com and take a bite out of your web hosting costs.